This is 1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And that was great. We had Blake Whiteman on from Ragnauer, Hyken, and Lewis. And I'm going to give out the contact information. It is 602-254-9900. If you have any questions for Blake or any of the great attorneys at Ragnauer, Hyken, and Lewis, that's 602-254-9900. And now, this is great. It is the second Monday. If it is the second Monday, I should say, from 3 to 4, Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Wow, you were nodding your head. It's like, oh, wait, we're on Ustream. So some of the people could see you were okay. And Paul, you're doing well. You came all the way from Houston.
As always.
That is great. I mean, that shows a great dedication and commitment to helping people. I'm just impressed with that. How is the weather in Houston?
A lot colder than here. It's really? About 50 during the day right now. It was colder. It's been going up and down. It was freezing a couple weeks ago. Then it was in the 70s and 80s. Now it's back to cold again. Mm-hmm. Winter's sort of hitting.
You know, I saw on this email attachment, someone showed me, and it was a picture of Matt Leinart. And he was waving. His hand was out. He goes, do you miss me yet? So except for yesterday, I guess they played pretty well.
I have to say, people who know me are going to be surprised by this, but I actually took a day off.
No way. You didn't go see the Cardinal game?
I took a day totally off. No work, no school, no football.
No football? And you're such a loyal, dedicated season ticket holder to the Arizona Cardinals. That was surprising. What a blowout. How'd that happen?
I don't know. I missed it, but I heard some good things.
Yeah, the young John Skelton, I guess, came through pretty nicely, huh?
And our kicker.
Oh, did he set a record? I have to check that.
Yeah, it's possible.
He scored a touchdown. Can you, as a fake, field goal, and he scored?
I heard about that.
Unbelievable. Kurt, you saw that, huh? Wow. Hey, Kurt, I heard you on the Michael Crawford show talking. Wow. Hey, there he goes. Let's see if he says anything on our show. Here he goes.
Yes, I can say things.
There we go. That was good. You were good, too. I heard that show last Friday. I think it was Friday. It was very interesting. Some guy wrote a book, and they were having a debate. Anyway, Understanding Autism, this is great. This is always helpful to have a show like this because, let me ask you, I'll ask both of you, isn't there sort of a misconception about what autism is? Who wants to go first? Paul, you go
first. I'll go with that one. There's always going to be a misconception about what autism is. The problem with any condition like this, any mental illness especially, is that there's rarely an outward sign of it. If someone has a broken leg, you see the cast or you can see them limping and you have sort of an immediate response, take the weight off the leg, you know, tell them not to move it. Autism or other mental conditions are in the head. And there's not a way for people to relate to them easily. It's not something that comes and goes or something that many people experience. Then you get depictions of it in popular culture. You see movies. You see Rain Man is a common example. Yeah. And people start thinking of it like that. They think of it like the one person they've experienced with autism who was a screaming child who couldn't be controlled or just their limited experiences of it. And it's very hard to have a widespread vision of what it really is to a lot of people because it's just so hard for people to see accurate depictions of it.
And it's a huge range, right, Kim? There's
huge.
A big, and that's why you call the autism spectrum
disorder.
So tell us a little bit about that. You know, from one area, one side of the range to the other, how does that, what's some of the differences?
Well, one thing offhand that I can mention is that frequently, people who have autism also have kind of a slew of co-occurring conditions. So some people with autism also have speech delay or motor impairments, seizure disorder, food allergies. Those are some things that people can observe behaviorally and sort of confuse for the autism. So when you meet a person who's exhibiting all those things, they might be considered like a lower functioning type person, when really, to be more accurate, it's their person that has the core of autism and they also have some of those co-occurring conditions. But not everybody has those things.
So it might be hard to diagnose? Or is it easy? Paul? Or Ken?
You know, well, no one had a clue I had it until I was 23. So I got diagnosed with ADD, depression, things that were, as she would say, co-occurring, but they were also in part symptoms of the challenges that I was having. They showed up as side effects rather than being the core condition. Because autism is such a spectrum also, it's very hard to explain it to others. I mean, that's part of what we wanted to talk about this week was talking about autism with your family. Everyone's going home for the holidays. People may not know what to expect, is how to sort of communicate with family members who either may be experiencing this for the first time or may finally be wanting to better handle this, or if you've just got a diagnosis, what can be expected and how to help deal with it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and that is a great topic. I mean, it is the holiday season, and how to talk about autism with friends and family. And why did you pick this topic, Ms. Kim?
Well, I thought Paul and I both thought this topic was a good one. We both have different levels of experience with this topic. One, the commonality is this time of year is busy for everybody, and there's family gatherings, and, you know, events and routines are a little bit different with kids and adults. School's out, there's vacation time, just a lot of chaos and change in the home on a level that we can all relate to. But then when you have a person who has trouble processing degrees of change or is comforted by sameness and you have all this chaos going on, it brings up a really important point on how can we help make a chaotic time calming, productive, fun, and include people in the process at the level that they can participate.
That's interesting. So what you're saying is during the holiday season, where it should be joyful, it's stressful.
For some people who have autism and for...
Well, I mean the general public. I'm just talking about some of the drivers where, and you go in shopping at some of the big department stores and they knock you over to get, you know, a certain toy. So it's like, that's sort of, where do we lose touch on being compassionate, considerate, and polite? Instead, it generates the worst in people. What's up with that?
And that's kind of a very close point in my heart with the people that I work with. I want for my clients to really enjoy the holidays with their families, and I want it to be meaningful for all parties involved. And sometimes that doesn't happen due to not understanding, you know, what your autistic loved one may need or how to include them in some of the holiday festivities.
You know, that totally makes sense. You did say something that got my attention. Well, everything gets my attention, but this was particularly interesting. You said sameness, and you use it in the context of comfort.
I chose that word. That's how I interpret
love that.
It.
No, that
although
is,
Paul may disagree with
well,
me.
Well, let's hear about know. Yeah. Let's hear your interpretation of that. Sameness, does it equal comfort? To me, when I heard that, it meant, you know, there's some. It's familiar. It's
understandable.
Safe. Yeah, there's a structure to it that you understand. Is that something that you can relate to?
I think I can relate to that. I mean, there's definitely a comfort in knowing what's going to happen or being able to have a predictable situation. I know that I'm very interested in change in certain ways, but that overall it can also be very uncomfortable when something new or unexpected happens, and it can be more so for someone on the spectrum.
Yeah.
I think that sameness... One thing that can be difficult is something that someone not on the spectrum sees as sameness may not be the same as something that someone on the spectrum sees. That a lot of things that should be reassuring for everyone may not always be. That a large difficulty can be in different viewpoints on the same situation.
Well, that totally makes sense. I mean, people attach the meanings they attach to certain circumstances based on maybe their upbringing, beliefs, certain cumulative experiences. So you're going to have different meanings.
And in autism, it's kind of a chronic misunderstanding process because a lot of people, you know, the loved ones in someone's life, or I would say like the neurotypically developing people, are making, you know, taking actions, saying certain things based on information that they've processed and integrated, assuming that the reciprocal partner has processed the same stuff when they haven't.
No doubt about it, and I'll bring it up. I always bring it up. NLP, everyone has a different model of the world. They're mapping reality differently, And so people out there should not assume just because you attach a certain meaning to something, the other person attaches the same meaning. It doesn't happen very often. That's why we call it miscommunication in the dictionary, right? I saw the definition of that, where two people are not seeing the same thing. That happens. And the court system intervenes, too, on those cases.
That's one thing I really encourage in the people that I work with parents particularly. It's really important to ask yourself, you know, the questions, kind of personal questions of, what am I seeing as important here? You know, what pieces of information do I have that maybe my child doesn't have? How can I provide insight on what those are so we can be at sort of a level communication ground?
Well, I think an important idea is actually, he brought up the idea of people attaching different meanings to things, is to remember that another key component is that they may not attach meanings to some things that you attach meanings
Definitely.
To, that there's a deficit in the ability to attach meanings in general, that even assuming different meanings, you also have to assume that they may not be picking up meaning in the first place.
Personal meaning.
You know, that's really a good point. And, you know, the great Milton Erickson, who was a great psychologist and a medical hypnotist, he understood models of the world. And actually, the founder of NLP, his wife, Leslie Cameron Bandler, Richard Bandler was the co-founder of NLP, and his ex-wife, Leslie Cameron Bandler, great psychologist, PhD, said there's no such thing as inflexible patients, only inflexible therapists, meaning take responsibility for yourself to change up your behavior and communication. It's called behavioral flexibility, to start looking at ways to get through to other people, because you just can't make the assumption they understand the world the way you understand it. So take the responsibility with variable ways of dealing with it so you can add the key ingredients so they can understand.
Well, definitely. And that's one thing we want to talk about today. We really want to help family members feel comfortable to discuss with their relatives and friends what autism is, what might they expect to see when they're interacting during the holidays, and some ways to be supportive, and also some holiday activity ideas. But I also wanted to mention we would love to take calls. We had some emails come in, some questions that were emailed to us, and we're going to be answering those a little bit later on. But I wanted to be sure that people knew that we would love to take their questions.
That's a great idea. And if you want to call in, it's 602-296-3632. That's 602-296-3632. And we are talking with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac and this is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. And before we get into the main topic, let's describe, or you want to talk a little bit about your background. We'll start with you, Kim, and then we'll talk to Paul. Who are you? No, I know who you are, but give a little bit of your credentials.
Okay. I have worked with people who have autism spectrum disorders for almost 14 years now. I have worked with people of all ages, from age 2 to 43, and I have a professional certification in relationship development intervention, a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Maryland, and I'm currently working on my master's degree in counseling studies.
Nice. You don't have any spare time, do you?
Pretty much, no.
That's why you didn't see the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. One of their probably better games, I suspect. So, Paul, tell us a little bit about you.
I'm 27. I am one of the people Kim works with. I was diagnosed with Asperger's, which is on the autism spectrum, when I was 23. And since then, I've been trying to learn what I can about it and how to deal with it.
And you're a co-host on Understanding Autism. That's sort of cool, isn't it?
Yes, that is pretty cool.
That is very cool. So, now the topic today is how to talk about autism with friends and family. And, of course, during this holiday season, as Kim and Paul were saying earlier in the first segment, you know, it gets chaotic, it gets stressful with everyone. And so there's going to be some practical tips and hints that you're going to give to people. So let's start with some of the stats, statistics. What's going on there?
Well, I think that this is a piece of information that does get portrayed pretty accurately in the media. The rates for autism are very high. At present, the rates are stated as one in every 91 births.
Wow, that... It used to be so much higher. What happened?
Well, I know. It's changed, and we've talked about this in previous shows. I mean, in the 60s, it was one in every 2,000 births. In the 70s and 80s, one in every 1,000 births. And it seems that the numbers keep increasing, and partially because the diagnostic criteria has changed quite a bit since the 60s.
So do you think it was... Well, it's probably hard to know, but do you think, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it could have been 1 in 91, or is there some environmental issues and other things going on?
Well, there's probably a combination of things. That's one of the mysteries of autism. Nobody really knows what the cause is, nor do we have a cure. But I think, in part, diagnostic criteria has improved. And as society changes, I think there are a lot of changes. Diets change, the environment's changed, the family unit has changed. There's a lot of considerations.
Wow, that's sort of startling, 1 in 91 births. Now, I think I've heard that males have a higher incidence. Is that true?
It is true. Three out of four people are male who have autism.
Three out of four people with autism are male.
I
can always count on my wingman here to clarify that.
Yeah, I thought I was going to say 75% of
the
males.
No, I'm sorry.
Holy moly.
I meant, okay.
So in other words, if there's four people with autism diagnosed, three of them would be males.
Correct.
That is, who knows, do you know why that is? What is that?
We don't know why that is. It's a mystery. There's a lot of research going on. But what these numbers tell me is that there are many, many families experiencing the holidays this year with a loved one that has an autism spectrum disorder. And that's what we wanted to talk about today on the show.
Excellent. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so let's get right down to it then. What are some of the things that you would recommend or observe or things that people can apply?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is the importance of taking the time ahead of time to make some plans and think about what your child, no matter what age the child is, may need during family parties or dinners and things like that. Paul and I were talking about how overwhelming it can be sometimes when there's a crowd of people, especially people you may not see very often. But even people who you do see often, it can be a little bit overwhelming. And Paul and I were talking about some strategies that may help a person with autism to feel like they can participate in events like that.
So what would some of those be?
Well, I mean, I find the most important thing for me, just in general everyday life, and this applies there as well, is the ability to get away, to have a place I can
take
go to
break.
And take a break. And in a family gathering, it may be a lot harder for someone to feel like they can take a break. You're around family. You only see them once or twice a year. You may have traveled with your family, so you're in a different state. You may be at their home, so you don't have a way to get away because your car isn't there or your bedroom isn't there or whatever safe place you have isn't there. And one thing that, a lot of family sort of feels and a lot of people sort of feel is that if someone seems to need to get away or whatever, that they should try to make them feel welcome or participate. And someone on the spectrum, their needs may be a bit different, that they don't have the same sort of emotional responses necessarily. And a desire to get away isn't a desire to be welcomed. It's a desire to have that actual space.
Well, that makes sense. And so you got to honor that. So if people knew that, they could even suggest it if they wanted to.
And it's different for different people. Some people may need to take frequent breaks. Some people may need to have some sort of, prearranged, loose schedule to, know what's going on. It is really important, though, to find out what works for your loved one and respect it and follow through on that.
So that's very important. So one of the tips is to honor for people on the spectrum to understand that they might need a break.
Mm-hmm.
And for people not on the spectrum, family, friends, whatever, that
it's honor not a that. Reflection
so
of
it's a,
them
yeah.
wanting to. It has nothing to do with, I hear a lot from people that, oh, my child just doesn't want to be involved in family activities. That's not actually true.
And does that make the person on the spectrum feel worse? Or could it?
It's kind of difficult. It sort of depends on how that message is delivered. I mean, it's just very difficult to say. If someone is keeps trying to pressure you back into joining, then, there's sort of a feeling of guilt there. Or if they let you know that they're disappointed that you didn't join them. And that can also make everything else going forward more stressful because then you feel like you have to be involved or you're going to upset people. So depending on, I think a very important thing is to try to figure out what the person on the spectrum's needs are in advance and figure out how you can honor their wishes in regards to that. If they think they know what they need, try to trust them to know what they need.
And if they don't, something I suggest with my clients is it's a really good idea to have sort of a family meeting ahead of time where you talk about this is who's coming, this is what we're going to be doing, and, this could be a process. Not everybody knows what they need. Paul has a strategy that works for him. Everybody has something different that they'll need in order to be okay. And more specifically, needing a break could be because of sensory overload, social input overload. For somebody that has difficulty processing many pieces of information at once and picking out what's important in many situations, it can be really overwhelming.
And that's another thing she was saying. There can be several different causes, sensory overload or whatever, is that the person experiencing the problem, the person on the spectrum, is probably not going to know what it is that is setting them off. They are going to know, I need to get away, or I need this, I need something, but not why. It's very hard to separate what it is. I mean, a big problem is episodic memory and sensory processing. Is figuring out what details are what's setting you off is not necessarily something they can do at the time. Well, especially at the time, but not necessarily later either. And trying to figure it out with them while they're in that situation is just going to make things worse.
I got you. Now, you did say something earlier that, if someone didn't understand, a family member or friend, and they said, hey, why didn't you join us, and you mentioned, you might feel guilty if someone put pressure on you. Would the opposite be helpful, saying, I fully and completely understand, and it's totally okay to take a break. Would that make someone feel better?
I'm not entirely sure. Again, it sort of depends on how that message was delivered and under what conditions. I know my personal preference would just be for me to be able to say, you know, okay, guys, I need to take a break now. I'm just going to go read a book or something and have everyone just say, okay. I don't want them necessarily acknowledging the situation because, you know, I don't want it to be something that's dwelling on them or that they're thinking about. And saying I'm okay with it also tells me that they're thinking about it. But I don't know how this is going to reflect for other people.
So I think everybody experiences, you know, those things differently. And it's a tricky thing because one of the important things about the holidays, and I sort of started to say this and we expanded on it, is planning ahead of time is really important to the best you can. And it doesn't mean in a rigid fashion, you know, with, you know, time codes on the schedule, but discussing with your loved ones the basics of what's going on, understanding that it's perfectly okay. Like, as you were saying, if you need a break, that's perfectly fine. I'm also a fan of helping your loved one communicate a little bit better how to appropriately convey they need a break, because sometimes that communication can be misunderstood as well. So I've actually worked with people on practicing how can we communicate to people we need a break, but it's not about them. We're not walking away from them. Well, we can say, I'm feeling just something like this. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I need to go read my book for a while.
So you're really giving permission for someone on the spectrum to say that.
To take care of themselves.
Yeah. And is that needed? Is permission a big thing?
It's not necessarily permission so much as just the knowledge of the person on the spectrum that they're not going to be resented for this, that it's not going to be causing a problem for everyone if they have to leave. Because, you know, part of the stress can be around them, but, you know, then it's an additional source of stress if you know that you're disrupting things by having to leave or whatever. So trying to plan things where they have the option to leave, where they aren't stuck somewhere around a crowd of people without, you know, any way to get calm or escape is nice.
I think it's also important to, in part of the planning, we're sort of speaking in terms of taking breaks, but so people are probably wondering, well, what can we do together? We're talking about breaks. Breaks are good, and breaks should be allowed. There are also some ways to include your loved one who has autism in ways that are maybe some small competent roles within the bigger activities to create some meaning for them as well without having such high expectations that everything sort of goes awry. So we're going to talk about that this show as well.
And by planning, it sounds like you create some type of certainty, which gives comfort.
That could be one of my main thinking points on this is more about the communication ahead of time.
Oh, I got you.
Just communicating and trying to understand each other ahead of time.
These are great tips. I like that. And you are listening to Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Alden. And we'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
How prepared are you for a criminal attack, fire, or medical emergency? The worst time to want a security system is after you need it. I'm Kara Lee, Director of Promotions for SafeTech Security. Now is the best time to secure your home, your family, and your peace of mind. Please contact me to get free equipment, free installation, and even free monitoring through our special program right now at safetechsecurity.com or call Kara at 602-510-6465. That's safetechsecurity.com.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions. real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas. Next time, can you bring Matt Leinart back with you? Okay, maybe not. Actually, the way they played, maybe not, right? Oh, I'm getting the look from Kim, who's a dedicated, loyal season ticket holder for the Arizona Cardinals. How about my Coyotes, though? Was Rick upset about Dallas?
You know, I don't know.
Coyotes nicely.
Against the Stars. Oh dear.
Yes. Uh-oh.
Sorry, honey.
Yeah, that's, and she's not referring to me, honey. There's another honey involved. Okay. So anyway, let's go to some more tips. We were a couple things that come to mind is, how do you describe autism to family and friends? I think that's maybe even the starting point, because without that understanding, people may not know what to do, how to communicate.
It can be very confusing, especially if you go by observable behavior when you don't understand the processes that are driving the behavior you're seeing. And Paul and I have talked about this a little bit, and actually Paul came up with a pretty good way of describing to people in the most basic terms what they may be seeing. Does he remember? Oh, no, I'll say it.
I don't remember which description you're talking about right now. I think I've described
many
different ways.
Well, first of all, actually, before I give this definition we came up with, it's also important to talk to the relatives about what they may see from your child, regardless of the age, so that they kind of know ahead of time. You know, sometimes so-and-so does this, and that means maybe he's excited or happy. Or sometimes he does this, and that means he's feeling a little bit stressed. It's really important to sort of decode some of those things for relatives ahead of time so they're not totally startled by certain behavior. But Paul and I were talking about that people with autism don't always see the importance of a situation when it's happening or why it's significant. Sort of the why of interactions. They don't attach the same kind of social-emotional meaning at times, and so something could be going on and the person with autism could be reacting completely out of context because they really don't know that in that moment it's important to all these other people that XYZ is happening.
So give us an example. Would that be what's described as like a Kodak moment? You remember the commercial where something special, unique, sentimental, is that what you're describing?
Well, I have an example just off the top of my head. You know, sometimes when we give gifts to each other, let's say I hand Paul a present, and I'm really particularly connected to his reaction to it. I want to know that my actions affected him emotionally. And so I'm waiting for him to open the present, and I can't wait to see the reaction. And to him, he's opening the present, it's a thing, and it's not that he's not thankful and that he doesn't maybe like it. But I'm craving that emotional feedback, and that's something that he may not realize I'm looking for or want. And so a person with autism within, you know, the holidays are very social times, social emotional times.
Yeah.
People, it can be very easily misunderstood, like, oh, well, you know, he didn't like my present, or why isn't he responding to this? It's not that there's no feelings there or caring. It's a matter of knowing when those things are important to come through and understanding why. They just don't make sense.
Well, you know, does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yeah,
that description?
It's a very good description of the issue, is that a lot of times the question of what you should do and why is difficult to answer for someone on the spectrum. Or even you might even know that the gift is important to them, but you know, you don't want to show a dishonest response. You don't want to, you know, try to put an expression on your face and do something that they might not understand. So all you've got is, thank you, I really like it. Yeah. And if you say that to someone, you know, if they don't see it on your face, if they don't see it in your body language, if they don't see it, then they don't necessarily think it's as meaningful to you as it really is. It's very hard to communicate the same degree of meaning when you're not working with the same tools.
Now, that's a really good point. And would there ever be a case where there would be a gift that's so meaningful to you, not so much to the giver, that you would be very expressive?
It's entirely possible. I mean, it's just why a gift is important is different to everyone.
Yeah.
But one of the connections that may often be missing is for it being important to me because it's important to you.
And this is sort of the key point that I'm sort of getting at, is that level of intersubjectivity, taking multiple perspectives, past and present. You know, some people have family traditions where maybe there's like a special gift that keeps getting recycled, you know. And so it's all those emotional connection components that sometimes, and for every person with autism it's different, may not make sense or understand why is everybody so excited about that. But there are relevant personal meanings behind things that people with autism aren't understanding necessarily. So, again, to different degrees, everybody's different.
So that's why it's so important to talk about that with family and friends so they won't feel offended, for example.
Yeah, I mean, the person who knows what the child is most likely to mean with different things is the child's parent or primary caregiver. And that person, hopefully, will take the time before you get together with the grandparents or the family or the cousins or whatever to talk with them about, you know, this is the kind of thing he has trouble with. This is what he usually means, that he may not react, but he still appreciates your gift. And if he says thank you, he means it, and so on. That it's important to try to communicate as clearly as you can, even if, you know, not everyone will understand what autism means necessarily, but you can talk about the behaviors that they're going to see.
And sort of decode. I've worked with a boy for like 14 years now. You've met him, Kyle. He's my sweetheart. And Kyle is nonverbal. And what I found is people are really, really watching me and how I respond to his behavior. So I sort of behave as a decoder for people. So if Kyle's screaming really loud and people are looking at me like, what's that? I'll say, oh, you're feeling really happy right now. You know, I need to help people understand what some of those things mean because they don't know him the way that I know him. And in the case of listeners, and as Paul said, family, caregivers, friends, people who are closest to the child, no matter what the age, Kyle's 27 now, by the way, you just had a birthday. So no matter what the age, though, those are the people that would be the best decoders for people that can't decode for themselves.
Sort of like a translator, in a way.
Sort of like a translator.
Now, it's interesting you mention that because I remember the very first time, and it was about 14 years ago. You were just a youngster yourself, Kim.
I was
amazed. Give some credit to you. Your gifts and talents, I mean, I think they were natural. I mean, I don't even know how you can learn that. To be able to, especially in that situation, is a little bit more, to me, it would just seem more challenging if someone's nonverbal. Yeah, I might be wrong, but to me, as someone looking in or looking from the outside in, like, wow, that's challenging. And the way you dealt and with the compassion was phenomenal. I don't know how you did it or how you do it, how you continue to do it. It's really a credit. Is she amazing, Paul, or what?
Oh, absolutely.
Really, it's a gift beyond very few, I believe, in the world have that gift. Very few.
Well, thank you.
It's incredible. Remember? Do you remember where that was, by the way?
At the park.
Yeah. I was with Shelley, my youngest daughter, and she was about 7 at Hidden Hills School.
Yeah.
That's like 14
years
ago.
Kyle and
I have
a very long history together. I love him to pieces.
Yeah, there's no question about it. But it is a true gift, and it just and sort of what we're talking about. My understanding level 14 years ago, I didn't really know what autism meant, but I was observing firsthand what people talk about. You were demonstrating many teachings that day, and I go, wow, That is phenomenal. So, you know, it is good for even just the general population to understand that, right?
Well, definitely. And I think these days, everywhere you go, at least everywhere I go, maybe everybody is drawn to me because they know about autism. But I meet people everywhere I go who knows someone that has autism, or just being out in a store, grocery store, retail store. It seems like we're seeing more and more people out in the community that have autism, and we should.
Well, I mean, think about it. You said 1 in 91 people are diagnosed right now. That means you go to a movie theater, a packed movie, new movie just came out, and you look in, and the theater seats 300 people, let's say. That's 1 in 4 people, 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 people in that room have autism or something on the spectrum. And that's just the people who have cases severe enough to diagnose it, who didn't miss diagnosis, who were at the right age at the right time to encounter someone who knew to even try to find out if they had it.
So what you're saying is 1 in 91 officially, but it could be much greater, right?
Certainly.
We don't know that, right?
Oh.
Or do you know that?
Oh, I know that. Well, I know
what
a couple.
What would you say then?
Oh, definitely. I think misdiagnosis happens frequently for many reasons. And again, that's going to be a whole other show topic. But certainly, I think the big message that I would like to send is that of compassion and really thinking before you label or judge someone. If you're out in the community and you see somebody having a hard time communicating or behaving, don't necessarily jump to a negative judgment. They could be processing things differently than you are.
I guess this is just a general rule for everyday life, but try to always assume the best intent behind something.
Definitely.
That, you know, that if they are acting out or if something you don't understand is happening, try to think of a way that they could mean it positively.
Of course. And everybody does, and I know you're going to comment on this, but there is always a positive intention behind what you see. And for people with autism, they're doing the best they can with the tools that they have. And it's our job, I like to call us as guides and parents and professionals and people who care about them, to be insight providers for them. How can we show them things that they're not seeing and help them to develop meaning in their day-to-day lives?
It makes sense. And it's funny that I think you commented on a thing I put on Facebook, NLP tip of the day, about people do the best they can with the tools they have, basically.
And I think that's true.
And it is.
And people need to understand, though, that people with autism don't necessarily right off the bat have the same tools as we have. They need to be taught those things. And I think that's where a lot of misunderstandings and conflict comes in.
And I think that's a good way of putting it, is that someone on the spectrum is working with a significantly reduced emotional toolbox. They have, maybe they may experience emotions in a weaker way, or they may have different abilities to comprehend the emotions they see expressed. But the tools that we have for interpreting and expressing emotions are available to a much lesser degree of someone on the spectrum, depending on where they are or what specific type of condition they have.
So if one is in a relationship and they're having trouble, sometimes maybe it's due to someone being on the spectrum and they don't know it, right?
That's very possible. Recently, I've had several emails and phone calls about people that are just sort of putting these things together. So.
Interesting. And that, so, you know, there's things to think about. The general public needs to think about it. People that aren't sure why maybe there's some behavioral issues, maybe they're not looking in the right place. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. If it's a second Monday from 3 to 4, Understanding Autism, starring Tim Isaac and Paul Loudon. And we've had a great conversation, I think, and hope that it's creating some type of understanding and compassion with so many people that can look beyond the behavior and look at the positive intention, like both of you talked about. And that's good whether you're on the spectrum or not, of course. So let's talk about some very specifics. We have the last segment here, maybe 10 minutes or less, and specific activities that you can do during this holiday season.
Yes, that's a question that I get asked a lot, and it's particularly important to me because I really want people to understand that they can make memories with their kids, regardless of their abilities, and that they can, even if it's one something that's very meaningful that they could build on from year to year. I think that when it comes to quality of life, that's a really important point. So it's important to think about in your holiday activities what roles that you could give your child within the collaboration that they could be successful in. For example, lots of people send out holiday cards. And when you send out holiday cards, you have to stuff the envelopes, you have to stamp the envelopes, you have to mail the envelopes. Selecting a particular role based on your child's ability to have them help participate is one thing you can do. So maybe you have a child that's really good with fine motor skills. So maybe that they could be the ones to put the cards in the envelopes and hand them to you and you could stamp them. Decorating the tree together, taking things out of boxes. A wonderful activity that I found to be really useful too is making your child the family photographer. Because sometimes, and this actually may help in larger group situations where sometimes a person with autism may feel a little bit lost and they don't know what their role is. If you give them a role, like you're going to be the family photographer, they have some sort of purpose. And it also helps them to interact with people on some level, but in a level that they're successful in. So you always want to think about what role can I create a sense of competence to include my child. And this requires that, you know, planning ahead of time, thinking about what you could do together, thinking about and collaborating with your child too, talking about all the things we need to do and how can we work together to do them together.
You know, it's interesting that you said new roles and purpose. The key word there was purpose. And when people have a sense of a different purpose and different identity in a specific context, it all sometimes will change their behaviors. They'll start thinking like, wait, if I'm in charge of this, that means I might have to do something they never thought they had to do before. And in NLP, one of the deepest of all the psychological levels that impact behavior is when you change who you think you are and what your purpose is. And
well,
maybe this is what
well,
you're talking about.
Well, this is helpful because sometimes people might look at their child with autism and think, well, they can't participate in the full conversation, so that means they can't do anything. That's not necessarily true. You want to break things down and think about, what can I give this person that I know they're good at, even if it's the smallest piece of something?
It's a self-esteem builder, maybe?
It is, and it includes them, because you think about what kind of message would you send your child when you don't include them in anything? And even if it's with a good intention, even if you don't know how, and Paul and I have talked about this before, but sometimes it's easier, or because parents genuinely don't know, that they don't really involve their kids in the whole holiday process or any other process. And, you know, that also sends a communication to those individuals as well.
That makes a lot of sense. Those are great ways of more than just giving a role, but enhancing maybe skill levels and maybe creating different behaviors and participation, like you said. That goes a long way.
Well, yes, participation. And the key there, too, is really doing it together, because each person can have a role. You know, even in setting the table, there's a lot of turn-taking and that could be implemented in that. You know, mom can set a play setting and little Johnny can set a play setting. You know, there's a lot of potential turn-taking in there to get some social opportunities to collaborate and actually do things together. But I think it comes down to slowing down and planning ahead of time, because when people are in a rush, it's even harder to include people that need a little extra time to process things.
Now, you're talking about children. How about for adults on the spectrum? Does that same thing apply?
Oh, I think the same thing definitely applies, you know, to different degrees. I mean, everybody can participate. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and children of any age can participate in some of those family things. It is really important, too, and Paul and I have talked about this, to talk about not only just planning sort of ahead of time and giving some sort of loose schedule of what's going on, but also if plans change is a big kind of question that I get a lot. People with autism don't always do well with surprises or changes in plans. It's really important to explain why and not just say so-and-so changed their mind, so we're not doing that. Because a literal thinker, in fact, I had this happen to me long, long ago. A little girl, I said, we're going to play a game together. And I said, actually, I changed my mind. Let's do this. And her eyes got really big, and she was like, you changed your mind? You know, she thought that I literally changed my mind in a literal sense. Oh.
Even in the case of not quite so literal thinkers, we've got an example of, well, you know, we were going to go do something with grandma, but grandma changed her mind. Is expound on that, you know, that, you know, the plan wasn't to go to the mall. The plan was to spend time with grandma. And now that grandma's staying home, we're staying home here so we can spend time with her. That you know, try to make sure that you focus on why it's important that we change our activity.
The why. Because that's something, talking about understanding autism, is a person with autism may not necessarily naturally pick up what the why is. Mm-hmm. And you want to sort of clarify that. So I think that's a really important point to discuss.
That's really important. Well. Understanding only creates more understanding, usually. So it's never a bad thing, I don't think.
Mm-mm-mm.
Understanding. Now, of course, this is a time when people get off school, vacation time, a couple weeks usually. What do you have on that?
This is a definite biggie, too. Questions I get asked frequently is, these are for people that are school-aged, regardless of the age. But, you know, there's a routine change during the holidays on a very sort of basic level, which is when you have a school-aged individual used to going to school every day and having that routine, when the holidays come, there's a two-week break from the routine that they've gotten used to. And for a long time, I worked with a little girl who she'd get really upset at the start of the Christmas vacation, which was so confusing because you would think, oh, kids, you know, like having a break. But this went on for a couple of years, and finally we realized that it was the change in routine that was stressful for her, and that we decided, okay, a week ahead of time, we wanted to sit down with her and, you know, write out a little calendar and a schedule of, you know, starting in 5 days, you're going to be off of school, and these are some potential things we could do, and sort of talking about it ahead of time. And after that, she was totally fine.
So you're really talking about everything you've been talking about, planning and communication, understanding, and really creating a bridge ahead of time, a transitional state or transition period, so more comfort. We talked about comfort earlier.
Well, that and just understanding and respecting that people with autism have some processing, whether processing disorder, processing delay, they need extra time to sort of take in, you know, what's important. We can shift very rapidly. So if we found out we were going to have a two-week vacation, we might be like, whoa, you know, we'd have to shift really quick. But for someone who's dependent on structure in order to function and be okay, having a shift like that can be very stressful for them.
You know, it's interesting, and you're probably going to say, oh, he's bringing up NLP again. However, I will. I don't do it too often. There's a thing called metaprograms where in NLP. I think there's like 51 of them now. But how people content-free really sort, and it's really a sorting process in your mind. And one of them is sameness or difference. So a lot of people will sort automatically for sameness, meaning when they look at something, they're looking for what's familiar. Other people sort for what's different. And it's interesting that you bring this up, and I suspect people on the spectrum, is this true? They're mainly sorting for sameness because of the structure involved, the comfort, the familiar aspects?
You know, I actually would say the opposite, at least personally, that the things I notice first are the differences.
Interesting.
And
really?
See, that might be the cause of stress.
And that's a little bit unique. A lot of the people that I work with, Paul's unique in that fashion. I would say the majority actually go the other way. But this also just reminds us that everybody's an individual first, and whatever their difficulties are separate, and those are unique as well.
So did you say that causes stress if you go for sameness or differences?
That noticing differences can cause stress.
It can.
That because I sort of feel that I'm often more aware of them than I should be, that they call themselves to my attention very quickly, that when I see a lot of things, the first thing I notice is what's different about them.
That's interesting. Now, I wonder if there's a way to shift your first focus to what's sameness and then reduce the stress and maybe make a bridge and transition into what's different.
Well, that's sort of how I approach situations a lot of times is, you know, when I enter a new situation, is looking for the similarities that I can recognize that help me develop a plan for that situation. But on a immediate level, before I'm processing it in my mind, what calls itself to my attention is differences.
Interesting. How about you, Kim? What do you look at first in a new situation, same or difference? Think back to the last time you were in a new situation.
Well, you know, I don't know.
We're doing a little NLP therapy here.
I think what I do is I sort of, I don't know if this even answers your question, but I always go observational. I just take in all these pieces and then sort of decide, based on what I'm observing, how I need to be reacting.
What's the first thing you notice? Something that's similar or is different?
I don't know.
Okay, we'll be doing that next month. And this is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Why don't you wave to the camera again? And who do you want us to say hi to?
I want to say hi to Rick.
Just
hi, honey.
Quickly to get it in, next month we wanted to try talking about some of the different therapies out there
yes.
for autism.
Excellent.
Next month's show.
Different benefits of what may be available or how you can look at them.
Very quickly, in 20 seconds or less, what's contact information for both of you?
You can email us at autismwithexcellence@gmail.com.
Excellent. Any contact for you or just use
just that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Kim Isaac, Paul Loudon. Have a great trip back to Houston. Bring back Matt Leinart next time, and we'll see you next month. Have a great Monday.